This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of neuromuscular scoliosis from the spine section on orthobullets.com. Let's start this episode with a quick introduction. Neuromuscular scoliosis is defined as an irregular spinal curvature caused by disorders of the brain, spinal cord, and muscular system. Neurogenic curves, relative to idiopathic curves, tend to be more rapidly progressive, may progress after maturity, is associated with pelvic obliquity, are longer and involve more vertebra, and keep in mind may involve cervical vertebra, and they also have a higher rate of pulmonary complications with surgery. Now let's talk about classification and treatment of neuromuscular scoliosis. In terms of outcomes, surgical correction with spinal fusion is the only treatment that has a documented beneficial impact on deformity. Parents and caretakers report excellent improvement in the child's quality of life after deformity correction. Increased risk of wound complications occur with poor nutritional status, that is defined as a serum albumin of less than 3.5 grams per deciliter, immunocompromised status, that is white blood cells of less than 1,500, presence of a ventriculoperitoneal or VP shunt, and severe spastic quadriplegia non-ambulatory status with seizures. Now let's go over classification and treatment in a bit more detail. We'll go over the categories of upper motor neuron disease, muscle weakness, and paralytic syndromes. So starting with the category of upper motor neuron disease, we'll go over cerebral palsy and Rett syndrome. So neuromuscular scoliosis in the setting of cerebral palsy can be treated non-operatively or operatively. Non-operative treatment includes a Boston-type underarm brace until puberty, that is age 10 to 12, and also wheelchair modification. As far as operative treatment, group 1 cerebral palsy patients are treated with posterior spinal fusion with instrumentation. Group 2 is treated with posterior spinal fusion plus or minus anterior spinal fusion with instrumentation and fusion to the pelvis. This is otherwise known as the Luke Galveston technique. Indications for surgery include a curve greater than 50 degrees, as well as worsening pelvic obliquity with sitting imbalance. Moving on to Rett syndrome, neuromuscular scoliosis in this context can be treated non-operatively with bracing for C-shaped curves. Operative treatment includes posterior spinal fusion, which is indicated for a thoracic curve that interferes with sitting and balance, as well as C-shaped curves that do not respond to bracing. Now let's move on to the category of muscle weakness diseases, specifically spinal muscular atrophy and muscular dystrophy. So neuromuscular scoliosis in the setting of spinal muscular atrophy can be treated non-operatively with a Boston-type underarm brace until puberty or age 10 to 12. Operative treatment includes posterior spinal fusion to the pelvis for improved wheelchair sitting. Be sure to address any hip contractures before posterior spinal fusion. Keep in mind that operative treatment for neuromuscular scoliosis in the setting of spinal muscular atrophy may lead to temporary loss of upper extremity function. Moving on to neuromuscular scoliosis in the setting of muscular dystrophy, keep in mind that bracing is contraindicated. Operative treatment includes posterior spinal fusion with or without fusion to the pelvis, as fusion to the pelvis is controversial. Posterior spinal fusion in the setting of muscular dystrophy is indicated with an absolute curve of greater than 20 degrees, as well as in the setting of a progressive curve. Be sure to treat these patients early before pulmonary function declines, that is, a curve from 20 to 30 degrees. Now, let's finish off with neuromuscular scoliosis in the setting of paralytic syndromes, specifically spina bifida and spinal cord injuries, and polio. So starting with neuromuscular scoliosis in the setting of spina bifida and spinal cord injuries, bracing is contraindicated, as it is in muscular dystrophy, while operative treatment can include anterior spinal fusion / posterior spinal fusion with instrumentation and pelvic fixation. Anterior fusion may be required because there is a minimal posterior element to obtain fusion. Finally, neuromuscular scoliosis in the setting of polio can be treated non-operatively with a Boston-type underarm brace until puberty or age 10 to 12. Operative options include posterior spinal fusion. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic might be tested. First question. All the following have been shown as significant preoperative risk factors for wound complications after surgery for neuromuscular scoliosis in patients with cerebral palsy, except, and the choices are 1, serum albumin of less than 3.5 grams per deciliter, 2, presence of a ventriculoperitoneal shunt, 3, hemiplegia, 4, white blood cell count of less than 1,500, and 5, severity of neuromuscular disease, including seizure history. The correct answer to this question is 3, hemiplegia. So all of the choices have been shown to increase risk of wound complication after surgery in patients with neuromuscular scoliosis, except hemiplegia. Though highly variable, some studies have shown significant increased risk of infection in those with poor nutritional status, that is a serum albumin of less than 3.5 grams per deciliter, immunocompromised status, that is a white blood cell count of less than 1,500, presence of a ventricular peritoneal or VP shunt, as well as those with severe spastic quadriplegia non-ambulatory status with seizures. Master et al. Performed a retrospective regression analysis of 151 patients with cerebral palsy undergoing spinal correction. In this study, the only significant risk factor for postoperative infection was presence of a VP shunt. Zoek et al. Reported on 172 cerebral palsy patients undergoing surgical correction and reported an 8.7 infection rate, that is 15 out of 172 patients, which included both superficial and deep infections. Notably, the authors specified that all of the patients with any type of infection were severe spastic quadriplegics with seizure history. Jeff Savar et al. Performed a case cohort comparison study in 44 total patients. Group 1 consisted of 24 patients with a serum albumin of greater than 3.5 grams per deciliter and white blood cell count of greater than 1,500, while Group 2 consisted of 20 patients with less than the aforementioned parameters. Head-to-head comparison revealed significantly lower infection rate, hospital stay, and shorter intubation period for Group 1 when compared to Group 2. More recently, Ramo et al. Published a series on over 400 patients over a 30-year period. This study reported a 10% infection rate in which implant removal was required in 58% of infections. In their series, the significant patient risk factors for infection were spina bifida and BMI of greater than 25 milligrams per kilogram. However, they note that most patients had been nutritionally optimized prior to surgery, so the number with an albumin of less than 3.5 was very small. In their series, appropriate antibiotic dosing and drain usage were also significant in assessment of infection risk. And moving on to the final question, what is a known risk factor for wound infection after spinal fusion for neuromuscular scoliosis? And the choices are 1, number of levels fused, 2, blood loss, 3, serum albumin level of less than 3.5 grams per deciliter, and 4, preoperative curve magnitude. The correct answer to this question is 3, serum albumin level of less than 3.5 grams per deciliter. So the risk for wound infection after spinal fusion for neuromuscular scoliosis ranges from 4% to 14% and is higher than risk after spinal fusion in idiopathic scoliosis. A recent study of a database of 151 patients with neuromuscular scoliosis found the presence of ventricular peritoneal shunt to be associated with an increased risk for wound infection. Age, preoperative major curve magnitude, number of vertebral levels fused, length of surgery, blood loss, and transfusion requirements were not associated with increased risk. A previous study found that poor nutritional status as measured by serum albumin of less than 3.5 grams per deciliter with a reference range of 3.5 to 5 grams per deciliter or lymphocytes less than 1,500 with a reference range of 1,000 to 4,800 has been associated with increased postoperative wound infections. That's all for this review about neuromuscular scoliosis. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you aren't already, be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.